Hi, I'm Nick Rigoretti's, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. The show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat. Hey guys, welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. I've got a friend of mine, Christopher Reed, as a guest this week. Very interesting cat, got some fantastic observations on life and jiu-jitsu. But before we get into the show, I just want to remind you guys that you can support us by heading on over to store.jiu-jitsubrotherhood.com and picking up any of our amazing jiu-jitsu products, including belts, gis, rash guards, hoodies, and stuff like that. And you'll also get a 10% discount when you use the coupon code podcast, so please check it out. Also, you will get 10% off any of the membership options at my online academy, which is jiu-jitsumasteracademy.com. And again, just use the coupon code podcast. And also, I wanted to let you guys know that we are again taking applications for affiliates for the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Network. It's an affiliation I run. We have branches all over the world. And now that I'm stationed in the United States, I'm going to be focusing on expanding the affiliation, especially in North America. So if you're located there and you have an academy and you want to take it to the next level, or you're just looking for some direction, please send an email to affiliation@jiu-jitsubrother.com. You can also find out more if you head on over to jiu-jitsubrother.com and click on the affiliation link in the top menu. Okay, guys, here we go. Episode 49, Christopher Reed. Hey guys, welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. Got a great guest today. He's a close friend of mine, Mr. Christopher Reeve. And the reason I wanted to have him on the show is because he really is the true embodiment of what it means to be a Jiu-Jitsu player, in my opinion. He really lives the lifestyle to the fullest extent. He's a humble, honest, technical, quality human being. And you know, I wrote an article about Chris about the day he received his black belt. It was one of the most well-received articles and things we've ever done at Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood. You can check it out. It's called Nobody Can Take This Away From You, and you can find it on the site. I'll leave a link in the episode description. And, you know, Chris is a very deep guy, and he has many interesting things to say as far as I'm concerned, and I wanted to get him on the show so that he could share that stuff with you. So it's good to have you on, Chris.
Hey, how you guys doing? How are you doing, Nick?
Good, my brother.
Good to be here, of course.
So the truth is that Chris and I started recording this conversation and I had a little crash with the piece of software that I used to record it. So we lost the first 10 minutes, so we're doing them over. And Chris, you were, unfortunately I have to ask you again, but you were telling me how you came to be training in jiu-jitsu. If you could just share that with me again one more time, please.
Of course. Growing up, I was always, you know, looking for, I mean, not, you know, but I was always looking for a way of life or some kind of manual on how to get through things. And martial arts always seemed to be the right way. You know, that was the disciplined way and the honorable way. So that caught my attention at a young age. And into my teenage years, when I could actually get out and move around, I was looking for schools. And at that time, Kung Fu was the real deal. So I found a Kung Fu school and tried that out for a few years until I was 18 or 19. Yeah. And around that time, the UFC came out. And I had wrestled, not formally, but I had a friend that wrestled in high school, so I knew about wrestling, and I liked that a lot. And I saw the UFC, and took that back with me when I went to the Kung Fu school, you know, the knowledge of it. Not the knowledge, like I knew what I was doing, but just the knowledge of seeing it. And as soon as I was training with another guy there, sparring, and I decided to go to the ground with him a little bit, I got in trouble. And at that point, I knew I wasn't in the right place. And in a strange happenstance, about 2 weeks later, I had a friend whose brother trained Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And I didn't know there was a place anywhere around me that I could find that did this. So I got in touch with this brother of hers and ended up in this Brazilian guy's garage. His name was Eduardo de Lima, really good jiu-jitsu teacher. I was with him for a few years. fell in love with jiu-jitsu, the art, saw the practicality in it. So I just fell in love. So I was there to stay.
Nice.
In the art itself, yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Nick.
Yeah, and so you started training with Eduardo Lima, and you took that through to what, purple belt level, or how far did you go with that?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it was purple belt. And then around that time, I wanted a little more adventure in life. It had nothing to do with jiu-jitsu, but so I went back into the Army thinking that I was going to, you know, be a medic and maybe even go special forces, all these kind of romantic dreams. I got in the Army and I wasn't there mentally or politically. So that's another story.
Yeah, that's actually a story I'd love to explore if you don't mind going into it.
I don't mind at all. But just to finish this out, I lost touch with formal training at that time. I mean, there was the Army Combatives program going on, but that was only like one day a week. So I would just put my gi on and go and sit in the all-purpose room in the gym that we had there and just wait for guys to walk by that looked like they wanted to wrestle around and ask them to train with me. And that's all I had for a few years as far as jiu-jitsu went.
Okay.
Came back into town a few years later. So this is probably around 2008. And throughout my time in jiu-jitsu, I had a really close friend. His name is Joey Best. And I found out he wasn't training anywhere at the time. And I would just wanted to train with him. So I got in touch with him, and we started training. And we just wanted a little club, just like two kids putting up a basketball net in front of the house so they could play 21 together. And it just turned into, well, let's call this guy and see if he wants to train, this guy if he wants to train. And, well, we got these guys that want to learn jiu-jitsu. So, and it just turned into Ybor City Jiu-Jitsu Club. And
what that's great. That's such an interesting parallel, I find, because you remind me in certain ways of my business partner, Mark Barton, who's, I also think he's one of those guys that just epitomizes the jiu-jitsu lifestyle. And he's just a true gentleman and an upstanding person. And he's someone I think that... I mean, I always judge people based on who they are, not on how well they can do jiu-jitsu. I think that's a much more important question much more important yardstick on which to judge people. So it's character first and then ability second.
You can judge them on how honestly they do jiu-jitsu. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, I guess that is true. If they do things like fish hook you or oil check you, it's probably a
give
sign.
Up way too easy. Things like these, I think, are...
Exactly.
Indicators.
Good indicators. And he did the same thing. He just started teaching a few guys at a gym down the street where he was a member. It was like just a regular chain gym where he used to go and work out. And he started putting out some of the mats in one of the little studios and teaching one of the trainers there. And now that has grown into a very, very successful and well-run academy in London, Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Kingston, which has, I think it's over 200 members. So it's so cool to see that guys like you and he have, it's weird. It's the way this little seed is planted and then grows. And I know there's loads of guys out there listening to this that either have done the same or are thinking of doing the same. And I really hope that hearing your story and the story of Mark's.
Well, I remember a while ago, a guy told me once that I had to throw my hat over the fence, so to speak. So I think it's just a matter of doing it. I think Mark was I think Mark was in the same situation. I forgot to mention, Joey nor I were black belts at the time. I was a purple belt. You know, I'd been a purple belt for 6 years, 7 years at the time. Joey was a longtime brown belt. I mean, his knowledge is immense. I think he's, besides just being encyclopedic in his technical knowledge, I think his jiu-jitsu, his form, his flow is bar none one of the best in the country, if not, you know, the world. As far as I can speak. So,
Yeah, he's very, very good.
With that honesty, you know, that honesty, that's what we started the club with. You know, it wasn't let's, you know, start a business. It was let's start a club. Let's train together type of a thing. So, yeah, I see that parallel. And we've grown exponentially in the same way, I think, as well.
So this brings up something interesting that I think you are qualified to speak on more than most. You know, there's an expression that I heard maybe 5 or 6 years ago, maybe even a little bit before that, which really impacted me in the way I do things, which is, if you treat your hobby like a hobby, it'll pay you like a hobby. But sorry, if you treat your business like a hobby, it'll pay you like a hobby. But if you treat it like a business, it'll pay you like a business. And tied into that is, you know, there's a lot of guys who they might have a job or they might have work and receive money in a certain way. And then jiu-jitsu is more their creative outlet or their social outlet. And they started an academy on the side and they don't want finances or money to taint it. So they either won't take payment or they'll take a very low payment, or they won't be strict with collecting fees. And, you know, for me, I've realized that if you treat something, almost anything in your life, like a business, with an exception probably being relationships, because I think it's, and even that, you can have aspects of business like parameters within those. I just noticed when you put this business like mindset to things, they generally become better. You know, that you have systems that are put in place, things grow, they run more smoothly. You start offering a better service. That means people enjoy themselves more. That means the gym grows more, it attracts more people, and then just things become better and better. Whereas if potentially you just are like, no, this is just a small club and, you know, we don't want to make any money out of it because for whatever reasons, it kind of never really grows beyond a certain point. Have you noticed that?
Definitely. And I think, I popped onto a thought in the middle of what you were saying. So I hope I wrote it all the way to the end and this stays with it. But I think that the problem there is that sometimes people get a transaction-based relationship mixed up with being a business. Just to be a business means that you have systems in place that things function the same way every time, that things are efficient. And that's what jiu-jitsu is, right? You make something more and more efficient. You learn the system, and you pare that system down until it's the most efficient it can be, and that's jiu-jitsu. And that could be business. That could be being serious-minded. You have people that turn into these jaded artists because they wanted to be that small club, and they told everybody they wanted to be that small club. So in 5-6 years, they're still that small club, or even smaller. They're angry about it. Now they want you know, everything given to them that they thought is owed to them, and it's not. It's not. You have to give in. You have to make the systems in order for that to work. And I do. I think that's just a little bit of a people convoluting business with transaction. And like you were saying, just in a relationship, you could have a business-like relationship where you know where your responsibilities are or where your irresponsibilities lie, where you've messed up, as opposed to you give me this, I give you that. That's not business. That's whatever you want to call it. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a very good point that a business relationship and a transactional relationship are two different things, and I hadn't thought about that. I guess for me, the further I get in life, the more I'm realizing that people don't value what they get for free, generally. And, you know, very often I've not wanted to put prices on things. Like, I'd rather just give free seminars or free private lessons and things like that. And very often I do. But it's the strangest thing. Like, then people just take it for granted. And, I mean, it's been my own... You know, you saw this in the yoga industry as well, like... People just didn't. There was a time when people didn't want to pay for yoga. They didn't think they should have to because they thought, okay, well, yoga is basically this free thing that people do in India, and you know, it's kind of like gym or physical education classes in school. I never paid for that. Why should I have to pay for it now? I'm going to pay $5 a class and nothing more. And that was okay, but once yoga became a much more professional, structured thing, the quality of and people had to start paying decent amounts to be members of quality yoga gyms. Yoga became so much better, and there were all these different subsets of it, and it just became very professional. And I see that happening with jiu-jitsu. I guess one of the things that does concern me is that can be taken too far, and
absolutely,
it can become just pure transactional, and everyone is just looked at like a number or this, like, you know, those cartoons when Tweety and Sylvester, the cat and the little canary, and the cat would look at him in his cage and see him as like a little roasted chicken type thing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm sure there's some jiu-jitsu coaches who see, or school owners that see when a student walks in, they see this like roast dinner walking in the door.
And these are almost parasitic relationships, because eventually that student becomes your purple belt that has to start learning the business. So you start pushing them to start pushing on the lower belts, right? So that you have a purple belt that's pushing on these white belts and things for different privates and things like that. I mean, I don't want to get, you know, it's a slippery slope. I don't mean that in all respects, but I can see that becoming parasitic. So this is easier and keeps me safer if I bring up the yoga industry. And I saw that with the student teacher relationship when the student wanted to take it a step further to become a teacher themselves. Mm-hmm. And these teaching programs that were thousands of dollars to learn these sets of yoga, you know what I mean? And it seemed a little bit parasitic in that respect, so that the general practitioner paid $5 per class, but then you had the people that were drinking the Kool-Aid, so to speak, paying $5,000 every 6 months to become a different level yoga instructor.
But at the same time, I see there is some value in that. I mean, I don't think you should have to pay $5,000 or $6,000 every 6 months to be any sort of instructor of anything, but you know, you want to know that your surgeon has been through a program, you know what I mean, and has the requisite skills. The same way I would actually want my yoga instructor to have some sort of certification, and my jiu-jitsu instructor.
Yeah, the value has to be there too, like you said before. I mean, so yeah, it's a slippery slope on both sides, you know.
I guess the best thing you can do as a student, anyone listening to this, wondering which side of that slope that they've fallen on. And I guess you don't want to be on either side of the slope. You want to be at the peak of the mountain or the center of the path, the balance point. It's basically, it comes down to feeling. How do you feel when you're in your gym? Do you feel like people are trying to upsell you on stuff all the time? On one hand, that's the worst extreme. And the other extreme is, do you feel like it's just a rinky-dink kind of, no one gives a damn and there's no structure? And if you're in a good gym, it'll kind of meet in the middle somewhere.
And I think also for the, sorry to interrupt you, Nick, but mm-hmm. for the school owner, if you feel like you might be in that rinky-dink spot because you didn't want to become that jaded artist and you kept giving things away, think about what you want for your students. So do you want your students to be in that same place as you are at your age? Uh-huh. You know, so you have to think about being that example in that sense. So that's a business too, you know, exactly. Making the next generation, you know, make that your business.
Exactly.
You know,
right.
don't make that your capital.
So. I totally agree with you. So tell me, Chris, I want to hear more about your army exploits, and in particular, what happened.
There's not very many exploits in the army. I got in there, got the training, got stationed somewhere, and just it wasn't for me. You know what I mean? So I hurt my leg on an airborne jump, and I took the medical discharge out. I mean, they were going to do it anyway. I just didn't fight it anyway. I wanted to be out of there. Even before I got out, though, a year before, I was calling buddies to see about training and things like that, because that was really, I decided at about that point that was the route I wanted to take. Regardless if I was a career, I knew that I just wanted to be training and living my life free, because I don't know if you can tell by my tone, but being in the Army, it was just too oppressive for me. I felt like I was in prison every day.
Wow.
So, yeah.
It's strange because when you told me you were in the Army recently, I think the last time I saw you, I actually got quite a shock, because I had no inclination that you were the kind of guy who would have ever been involved in the armed forces. You just don't have that persona, from what I can tell.
Yeah, it was, you know, a bit of the poverty draft and more, I romanticized it a lot. And I was bored. So there was a lot to do that, but yeah. I got there and I'm totally disillusioned.
Because you saw a lot of stupidity in the systems?
Absolutely.
Or?
Yeah. And I don't want to sound narcissistic, but it was very much, you know, it was the blind leading the blind. It was, you know, very inefficient, and it just, I didn't like what it stood for anymore. Not that I liked what it stood before, but I kind of tricked myself by reading, you know, like I said, the romantic novels, things like that. Mm-hmm. But getting in there, no, it wasn't for me.
Yeah, it's strange. The military, or the branches of the military, and soldiers are. It's always been a fascination of mine. I don't know if I mentioned early on an episode of the show, but I always wanted to join the army, like up until the age of 18, 19. I was looking into joining the Israeli army because I'd heard it was the best army in the world at the time.
Yeah, I read that. And my I mom, even read the, okay, I'm going to keep interrupting you, Nick, go ahead.
No, it's cool. And my mom, she said to me, are you out of your fucking mind? Like, they're at war, like, why would you want to do something like that?
And 24/7.
It's 24/7, right? And I just had this romanticized notion. And the thing is, I still respect soldiers so much. I've been watching this documentary on Vietnam. And it's, I think, it takes a reasonable level of intelligence to get to the point where you can, intelligence and flexibility, where you can say, make a statement such as, I don't support war, but I support soldiers. And I'd like to think that that's my current perspective, because I don't necessarily agree with the politics of particular wars and invasions and occupations and the neocolonialism of the modern era. But, you know, I look at soldiers and I have so much respect for those guys, for what they go through. It's just, they're heroes in my mind.
Absolutely. And you just said what you just said, the hero, right? So they're an archetype. The soldier is an archetype that's in you. It's in all of us. And it shows an indomitable part of the human spirit in both triumph and defeat, the dirtiest and the cleanest part, the most profane and the most sacred parts of the human spirit you see through soldiers. Mm-hmm. But that's the part that I got, that I meant when I said it was disillusioned, was realizing that had been usurped and used to control, you know, to get these poor kids into the army and things like this. And that was really the disillusionment that I went through there.
So. Yeah, so I mean, look, this is becoming a political conversation, which I don't mind.
I'm quite interested.
No, it's cool. I find it interesting. And I want to dive deeper into it. I want to make it clear that I literally have no political allegiances. I don't care about Democrat, Republican, or anything, or on any global scale.
Absolutely. I want to say that I'd like to say I'm not trying to take a political slant either. This is just the disillusionment that I went through was seeing that on any side, on any nation, on any thing like this. You know, I just didn't want to be a part. And then when you use the word soldier, use it in a nationalist sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yes.
You know, at the end of, I just watched Band of Brothers for the second time. God damn, it is such an incredible piece of media, man. It just blows me away. And you know, you get to know this company of soldiers who are obviously American allied soldiers, and you almost form this bond with them while you watch it, and you're kind of on their side. And then in the end, the one of the last scenes, this German general is surrendering, and he's talking to one of his companies. He's giving them the speech and telling them how proud he is of them, and you know, how hard they fought and all the people they've lost. And you realize that, okay, sure, I'm not saying I agree with Nazi ideologies, and I know the Allies were correct. But still, these guys, at the end of the day, most of them were just following orders, and they were just soldiers as well. And you feel for them as well. And you know, they're all part of the same hell. And they've all just been through almost the exact same thing. And I think you see it in the faces of these Allied soldiers who are watching this general give the speech to his German company. They realize as well, hey, these are guys just like us, you know, with human frailties and weaknesses and hopes and dreams. And I guess for me, that's when you said that it's this archetype that's been usurped. It really, really resonated with me, because I think of these recruiting commercials I see when I go watch a movie, or if I'm watching TV here in the United States, and it's like, army, be all that you can be. And I get those switches they're trying to flick in the human psyche, but then I get really sad when I think that it could be, and I'm not saying this is definitely true, you know, there's many sides to this argument, but it could be that they're just pieces of propaganda from the military-industrial complex, which are designed to line people like Dick Cheney's pockets. And that's very, very sad.
Yeah, this is the disillusionment. Yeah. You know, and I mean, you don't have to say anyone's name. You didn't even have to say Dick Cheney. Just the machine, whatever the machine is. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, it's cool.
If I could I'll try to turn this back to something martial. I mean, in another thing about the soldier though is that he sees life stripped to its barest, right? So this is what Musashi was talking about with the way. and seeing things, and finally they can see life and see it through all the things. So there's that part of it too. And I was
when you say that, can you expand a little bit upon that, please, Chris?
Yeah, you know, being put in these extreme situations, you get to see what you're made out of, so to speak. You know, your metal, as in modern parlance. But really, I think it's stripping yourself down to that Zen and that Spartan aspects to get the real you, and to find the way. What is real? Mm. You know.
That's
and once you, yeah, once you've done that, you can use that tool in a lot of ways. And I didn't find that in the Army like I thought I would, but I did find that in Jiu-Jitsu.
Well, so that's what you were looking for when you joined the Army. Is you were looking for a better understanding of yourself through. Mm-hmm. You were hoping it was going to be discipline and combat that would, and austerity that would lead you to that.
Right. And all those things I found, I don't want to get flack, you know, I'm not saying it's the same as combat, but the small little battles, these small little deaths that we go through on the mats every day, those help us in life. Those help us without shattering us, you know. Mm-hmm. Some people, I think it does, they can't go through the little shatterings even, but for those of us that make it through, we're way stronger in a Nietzschean sense, right?
So, so true, Chris, so true. You know, Chris, I wanted to speak to you a little bit more about something which you let me write about in that article, which I appreciate.
Mm-hmm. It
took a lot of the willingness to be vulnerable and to put yourself out there, and I think that's one of the reasons people really responded to it. But you know, you're a guy who grew up without a father figure, right?
Mm-hmm. And absolutely. Well, Bruce Lee.
Yeah, he was probably my de facto second dad as well. What do you? I mean, you really believe, from what I can hear in your voice, that jiu-jitsu can help people like who have experienced the same thing. They've had that hole in their psyche where they needed that father figure. I'm mm-hmm. guessing you believe that jiu-jitsu can offer that.
Yeah, I think that it's offering both that masculine father figure and even the feminine with the austerity, the family, and the tribe that you get if you're at the right school, the school for you. You know what I mean? That those little deaths I was talking about, you're going through those with everyone else on the mat. It's not you yourself. You know, one of the things I like to say is like the sweat on everybody's belt. That's only 10% your sweat. 90% of that sweat is from other people. So I think you get both. You get everything. I don't mean to sound like I'm proselytizing, but I think you can get everything you need in a human sense from jiu-jitsu, pretty much, you know.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to put it. You can get everything you need
missing.
In a human sense.
Hmm. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, you know, I've been experiencing lately, I spend a lot of time on my own at home, and I start going stir crazy. I think it's lack of human connection. And also, I mean, sometimes it's just sedentary sort of lifestyle. You know, if I haven't worked out that morning and I've spent the whole day working on my computer and it comes to 7 p.m. and I have a jiu-jitsu class that night, I'll go there and do that class. And it literally, as you said, gives me everything I need as a human being. You know, I get that physical touch, like group bonding, communication, camaraderie, exercise, fellowship, and then I leave and it's, you know, I'm a better person for it. It's almost, man, it's almost like I've taken a shower in quality and health and goodness, if that makes sense. When I walk out that door, I'm refreshed. You know
how I mean, you've said it, I've heard it countless times. Whoever says, you know, barring a freak accident, but even then I don't think people regret it. You know, who's ever said I wish I wouldn't have come to class after they
exactly.
leave jiu-jitsu?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
You know, I wish I would have started later.
Yeah. And I wonder how many, you know, there are. The problem is, I was going to say, I wonder how many people have been saved from joining cults because they stumbled upon a jiu-jitsu gym.
I know where you're going.
Yeah, you know where I'm going with that. I mean, I guess. Yeah.
So you want a teacher that, I mean, I don't know what you want. I'm just, I want a teacher that's going to tell me they don't know what they're talking about, you know, and not in a tricky way either. I want to go someplace that's going to open my mind to martial arts. You know, I don't want to go to a school that's going to close my mind. And I saw it in the Kung Fu arena when I was younger, so I know it exists. And I've seen it in jiu-jitsu academies, you know, that don't want you to train other places, or they make fun of the school or make fun of the teacher. It's like, no, you know, it's all jiu-jitsu.
Not for you. Whatever. Yeah, for sure. So, Chris, my man, really great pleasure to speak to you. It's so good to hear that you're doing well and that you're still being such a great representative of jiu-jitsu. I'd love to have your partner in crime, Joey Best, on. But
that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. He's a very private person. Yeah. Before we go, he said something to me. I'd love to get more of his input on it, but I know that it's not going to happen because of his fear of public speaking. Yeah. However, you guys are so close and you've known him for so long, and you guys are quite similar, so I think you might have just as valuable of a perspective on it. Yeah, I did the, I think you know the story, I did the 23andMe genetic test a while mm-hmm. back, and I was talking to Joey and a few of the guys at your gym about it, saying I'm looking forward to getting the results, and he said he would never do that, and I said, why? And he said, well, I know what will happen, or one of my fears is that I'll do that genetic test, and then my genes will go into this database, and one day I'll wake up and I'll be a slave on a mining colony on Mars, which I thought was both kind of paranoid, but also very imaginative and not beyond the realms of possibility.
Oh, it's absolutely possible.
Absolutely possible. I mean, I think it's highly unlikely. However, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that, is that... I don't know why I wanted to segue into this. I just find it very interesting.
I joined the army, so they take your blood and they put it in supposedly even before the 23andMe was publicly available, they had that stuff. So I'm already in some database somewhere, I'm sure. Well, I don't have an opinion. I have a question. Like, do you want to be plugged in as soon as possible so you can get the best thing out of the matrix? Or do you want to be that starving person that's like fighting these machines in the darkness? I don't know.
That's a great question.
Or you can end up plugged into the matrix fighting machines in the darkness. You know,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't have an opinion on that. We did, we skipped over, I think, what you wanted to talk about, or what you started to get into. So if you want to hit up another time and actually just
what
get
was that specifically?
I think you were going to get into more of my childhood stuff.
Yeah.
But, and the time, I got to go too as well, so.
Okay,
but
maybe we'll get into that on the next one, Chris.
Yeah, sorry to bring it up like that.
No, it's cool. Chris, if people listening to this want to train with you in Florida, if they're doing a visit, and I highly recommend you do visit Chris and his friend Joey's Academy, Ybor City Jiu-Jitsu, if you're visiting Florida, because they're both lovely gentlemen and they both have great jiu-jitsu. If people wanted to visit you, where should they go online?
To check us out online, we're Luddite-ish. So Facebook is the most current thing. It's Ybor City Jiu-Jitsu Club on Facebook. My telephone number is on there, or are the telephone number of the schools on there. You can find me on Instagram at Great Odin's Beard, or YCJJ, or excuse me, Ybor Jiu-Jitsu on Instagram.
Great. Yeah, cool, Chris. Well, thanks again.
Wait. It's Ybor BJJ, I think. I don't know what it is. All right.
And people will figure it out.
Yeah, Christopher Reed, R-E-E-D. You can Google that and it'll come up.
My brother, thanks again for your time. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Nick. It was fun. I'm just getting started, so call me back whenever.
Chris is such a unique and interesting guy. We didn't get into it on this episode of the show, but he has had some incredibly difficult challenges, especially in his young life. What I would suggest you guys do if you want to find out more about him, and I guess just read something inspiring, is check out the article on jiu-jitsubrother.com called Nobody Can Take This From You. And it's about Chris and the day he received his black belt. I think it's quite a moving piece, and I think you guys will get a lot out of it. Also, I just want to remind you guys, I didn't mention it in the intro, I forgot to mention it, but if you want to experiment with CBD and see how that works for helping reduce inflammation and relax the body after hard jiu-jitsu training, please check out truthnaturals.co.uk and use the coupon code JJBTruth and you'll get a discount on anything there. CBD is something I've actually been working with a lot lately. I started it about a year ago. and had some minor results. But recently I just upped the dosage and wow, it's made a big difference, really helped me, especially with my stretching and recovery. So I highly recommend you guys check that out. Even if it's not Truth Naturals, look into CBD, and I'm sure it'll give you some benefits. Okay, guys, next week is episode 50, another great guest for you. Until then, I hope you have a fantastic week and train smart.